Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Robin McKean, and all the hosts for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Forest, a safe place where we have the freedom to think about life without judgment. We take a look at society, we examine it, and we allow for the possibility of something new, something different. And now, here's your host, Alan Ritter.
Well, welcome everybody to September 10th episode of An Emerging Forest. And this week I was very pleased to get some acting work in the city of Philadelphia, locally in the city of Philadelphia. And not that I don't like going to New York, but there is some extra travel issues. But there's some really great experiences to be had in any place that you go. And I happened to meet quite a few interesting people this week, one of which is my guest tonight. And just like to introduce David Whitman and bring David Whitman into the show. Hi, David. Are you there?
I am, Alan. How are you?
Pretty good. Would you just like to introduce yourself to the audience and say, you know, sort of who you are, however you wish to portray yourself, and whatever part of your background you want to talk about in order to possibly set up what you want to talk about tonight?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, it was a great experience acting with you, and that's the first paid acting I ever did, actually. Exciting. It was very exciting.
That was about the fifth and sixth day that I've ever done that. So that series of days was the first time you've ever done that?
Yeah, I've done community theater here where I live in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, which is the largest town in the world. But, you know, it isn't home to the League World Series, so I guess once a year it gets its notoriety and fame with international appeal. But actually, it's funny, a year ago I played Reverend Paris, so I moved up to Cardinal status, which is I guess it's quite a bump. I'll take that, I would say, for the stage. And previously I played Bernard in a local production of Boeing Boeing, which is a door slammer comedy, which is an interesting show. I played a French expatriate living, an architect, I believe he was an architect. Anyway, he had three fiancés, all with a different airline, and what happened was he started getting a little bit stressed because the jet age started coming in, so the layovers were much shorter. So that kind of the premise of the show, and then hilarity ensues depending on your comic bent. But it was a good show. It was fun. But yeah, being on the set for that production, this production we just finished, was really exciting. I enjoyed it. Even the downtime, I thought it just really gives you a flavor for what it's like to be in the industry.
Yeah, very, very much so. And we certainly did have a cast of very, very colorful characters, whether we were on set or whether we were in holding. I'm not sure which was, I believe actually that both sides were incredibly educational.
Yeah, very much. And, you know, you can't talk about something like that without talking about the food and the catering. We had a great catering job by that company, which I sadly forget the name of, but, you know, fed us well and kept everything really, really flowing, too. It was a lot of fun, you know, to dress up. I mean, that's really what it was, wasn't it? Dressing up as a cardinal from a long distance period of time in the past. And bringing that to life on the screen, so to speak, what will be on the screen eventually. We were there making it happen, and having like a situation where you're having a dialogue, but you're not really having a dialogue, but it appears you are to those watching. It was an exciting time. I enjoyed it, and so one of the things I do,
yeah,
Alan,
I think...
is that I act. I act. That's one of the things.
Yeah,
that I do.
It's interesting. To sort of think about, there's certainly the visuals that we provided, but then there's going to be a lot of other voice over, and there's going to be a lot of other graphics, et cetera, to bring basically there's so many layers to the production that are going to be added or that were already fleshed out in storyboard format so that, you know, the final production is a much more densely layered object than you would think about, quote unquote, we're on stage portraying a ceremony. That would be the only thing the audience would receive. Whereas, television or movies or that type of media allows the producers to stack layers of CGI, just regular graphics. I mean, you could actually be doing like a PowerPoint presentation that the next slide would actually be a scene from whatever time period we were portraying, and then you would go back to another PowerPoint presentation where you'd be, you know, talking about certain specific details of the period. I'm not sure how it will be presented, but I'm pretty sure that it's presented in a nonfiction. It's presented in a nonfiction way, so that it's going to be much more of an educational tool than it is going to be an escapism tool.
Yeah, I would agree. That's a good way to put it. Also, there'll be a lot of smoke, Alan. There'll be a lot of smoke in this.
I'm really interested. Well, it was really interesting because I was in a production in New York City on two Mondays ago, and it was basically rooting at a sporting event, and they used a lot more smoke. So I was like, you know, I mean, I know you were just seeing the smoke maybe for the first time because that's the first time you've done that. But believe me, some productions, notably the production that I was on, used so much smoke that you can't see, and they actually have to wait for it to dissipate a little bit. But then they go right back and put even more in. I was actually talking to someone on set for the thing that we were just in, and they were saying, oh, that production must have had a fogger and not a hazer. And I said, yes, they were low budget. And they said, yes, that's why production is using the higher-end thing. And that's why they had to put up with what they had to put up with on the low budget movie. So there's the low budget thing that I was on, I was just watching the Steadicam guy who was moving around, and it was literally everything about that movie would be in the shot and where the cameraman was coming from. And literally the director, the director's job was to communicate what he wanted to the Steadicam guy in order to get the right shot. And you could just watch the two interacting and going back and forth and taking a take. And of course, nowadays, the director with the digital age, they can play it right back, right in front of them. And like we saw in the production that we were on, I was blown away by the level of detail that the production staff and the directors, plural, picked up on, because they were correcting where people would walk. They were correcting just absolutely everything, down to like lint in the carpet.
I know they're picking having the lint people up. Out. I know. Well, it's very detailed.
Right. Because literally they can only take it to a certain level. And how I've sort of related to that is you might get away with it with the television audience. But really what those productions are for is they're your product that's your resume for your next job. And you're also showing your product to other persons of peerage. And they're like either going to look at your shots and say, wow, that's inspirational, that's new and interesting. And they're going to look at your detail work and they're going to give you a grade. I mean, if you fall flat on your face, you're going to know about it. So that's why we're, you know, basically kneeling and getting up and kneeling and getting up and kneeling and getting up when we did that scene. So
I learned a lot about Catholicism in a degree. I've not really known much about it, but I didn't realize a Pope could be married, like Borgia, who my acting coach, Ken McGregor, played that role. And he's actually the person that turned me on to the opportunity, so I thank him for that. But I didn't realize that Popes could be married and have kids. I thought the priest took a vow of celibacy, or maybe that wasn't the case in the Middle Ages. And then, of course, Pope Leo and the Golden Boy, who died because he was painted with lead. So there was some interesting things. And a lot of the popes died, I guess, under mysterious circumstances. And at time, there were two popes, one in France and one in Italy. So it was the Middle Ages were a tumultuous time for the Catholic Church and the popedom, I guess you could say. And did you know about it? Is that true that they can be married? Because it doesn't seem like that in modern day. It would be a scandal if a pope had a child, I would think knowingly.
I think that obviously we're in on a historic production, so that at a certain time period they were allowed to be married. But I think possibly as a result of the example of the Borgias, where their power got out of control, there might have been a change in policy as a result of that. I am not a historian on the Catholic Church by any means.
No, nor am I.
But it would seem, I mean, just looking at the degree of self-promotion of his family members, that would basically have been an example of temptation that other members would basically say, hey, we're not going to have that happen again, right?
Right. But I think it raises a level of hypocrisy, because if you were, even historically, if there's a historical foundation that one time a pope had children, and then after this, maybe before that, the priest took a vow of celibacy and popes did as well, what begs the question, what led to the change? Was it just the Borgias? Would he completely run rampant? Or was this, you know, what caused the change? I think that'd be an interesting thing to pose. I don't know if the documentary will pose that question, but I think it's an interesting question to pose in this day and age in particular. What value it is that allows, you know, that a priest has to be celibate to be preached in that regard. If Borgia held popedom for 10 years and you know, brought out three kids, Juan and Lucretia, and I forget the other one's name, but it's interesting concept to kind of ruminate over, actually, or even even question. What are your thoughts?
Basically to research. I think the other son's name was Cesar, right?
Cesar, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So you know, so, I'm just kind of a little interested in that topic, actually, just because I just wonder what would have promoted that change and why it was acceptable to have children.
Why it seems today as if to even think about that there was a time period when popes and priests were married, just like so jarring. Why isn't it like open? Hey, you know, back in such and such a time, the Pope was married, instead of like, well, we wouldn't think about asking if the Pope was ever married, just wouldn't come up.
Right, exactly. You know, and it's that question that that you know, should be raised about that. And it goes to society in a lot of ways, and just how there's a certain hypocrisy in society. I attended a concert on Thursday night, and it was a great concert for what it was. It was in Newark. It was Roger Waters from Pink Floyd. I don't know if you're a Pink Floyd fan or not, Alan. I actually share Roger Waters' birthday, so it's interesting. Who's got my birthday? That's why I went.
I have liked their music. I'm sort of in the boat of like one foot in society, but maybe the other foot not in society anymore. After delving into what the society is about and thinking who am I and where do I need to go in order to satisfy my vision of who I want to be and where I want to go. Sort of, I think society has launched me on a journey. So it's certainly possibly you could make an analogy for it being my birthplace or my way station or the place I'm jumping off from.
Mm-hmm.
But the larger corporate media, et cetera, once you dig under the cover and basically look under the cover, one of the reasons the show is called An Emerging Forest is because corporatism and all of that stuff is actually reducing diversity and fertility. And I'd like to go in the opposite direction, which is why I'm saying I'm sort of jumping off the bandwagon.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing. It was incredibly corporate. I mean, the place was a palace where the show was, but it was over the top corporate, and everything was insanely expensive. Even though you're outside New York City, that's not the point. It becomes this thing where it is completely like stepping into this faceless world where all these different major companies and whatever are buying the ability to name a place, and then they can sell all these things at outrageous prices and people buy them, and the show is completely a spectacle. But at the same time, the hypocrisy lies in the fact that a multimillionaire musician is on stage, and in his credit, he's talking about topical things and trying to do something in regards to raising social awareness about the situation with our current president or with refugees or what have you. But it's a weird hypocrisy to have it in such a setting where people are paying $10.75 for a beer, and people probably paid at least $150 for a ticket, and that's in the low end.
Wow.
So, you know, the raging hypocrisy is the fact that
in order to get admission to the church to attend the service, which is going
mm-hmm.
to be about raising awareness for the corporate president's hypocrisy, it costs
right.
$200. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And And that's the thing. And you're also just you're attacking such a soft target that it was a fascinating experience. I don't ever want to experience again, really. I'd rather go see a smaller show with lesser known bands. It's more fun. And I think that's the problem with music in the experience is tickets, you really have to pay so much. Like you said, you've made a perfect analogy. It's not really about the music. It's about almost like a way to say, hey, I pay this much money to go see this show as a form of status, which is really insane.
I agree.
Flashing photos or images of Donald Trump and calling him a pig or what have you really is not really taking the conversation anywhere. It's certainly not offering a solution.
It's very interesting that someone of Roger Waters' supposed intellectual level is resorting to 1984's moment of hate.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, exactly.
Yeah, I mean it's really interesting because Pink Floyd's music does engage in some very interesting concepts. And if he was to talk about the material covered by the wall, or the material covered by animals, or
mm-hmm.
something other that's really, really dense, meaningful discussions of alienation of the individual, and or the discussion of politics in animals. That's much more moving. That's much more raising awareness and having a discussion of where does this come from and where is my society coming from. It's 40 years after those albums came out, or 30 years after those albums
mm-hmm.
came out. He's basically going on the 2 minutes or the 5 minutes of hate. So it's basically the lowest common denominator. It's basically he's engaging a certain audience with his music, which is and having a certain discussion with his music. But then when he's on his tour, it's like he's not engaging the same audience. He's engaging somebody who's at the event, who's got a beer in one hand and a hot dog in the other, and
mm-hmm.
they just want to have instant gratification, and he's a corporate figure, and
completely.
I've certainly talked about corporate law several times, more than several times in my programs, and basically saying they've tested their show. And they know what they have to give in order to have the audience walk away saying they got their money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, you and I are not engaged by that audience, which is why, by that experience, which is why we won't go back. But the vast majority of the people that were there were engaged by it. Because
right, no,
they know their audience, and he did play
two thirds of the animals, but he really didn't bring the message across the way it could have been brought across. He played dogs and pigs three different ones, but he used pigs three different ones the way just to pretty much attack Donald Trump in a way that really wasn't very effective. It was so gratuitously obvious that you're not making any headway with the message.
I think
I was saying, I think, and that's the case of, you know, you talk about there's someone who has all these years of wisdom and experience from, his father died tragically in World War II, and he's written amazing things over his life, and he's represents his generation. And then you have incidents where people talk about how millennials don't really care or they don't get it. But I'm going to, if you allow me to indulge me to, I want to read something. It's also directed at Donald Trump, but in a different way. And actually is more effective in the message of, and this goes back to, you know, the hypocrisy, more effective in the message of how to deal with a person like this and how to deal with a situation. And these are not my words. I've not written this, but
so,
I think it's something.
So could I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
So do you think it would be effective to take the break now and come back and start in with that message?
Sure.
Okay. So thanks, everybody, for hanging in. And this is certainly a very interesting conversation, but I kind of have to organize when I'm breaking on the fly. And so I'm going to play our usual song, which is Star of the Bards, Green and Gray, and I'll see you on the other side.
Lord of animals, the wild hunt I led. until your God came here and with his jealous hand, it was he who wanted dominion over this land. For I'm no devil, I'm father to the land. I have been here since the earth began. Neither black nor said if evil is where it lies in the hearts of man. But you lead us, oh you tempt us, to rape, to steal, to kill. The piper said, whatever happened to free will? Then the grove lay empty, the priest told no one. The blossom lay upon the thorn and the piper's tune was done. And in the sunlit forest, the animals they bow, as the piper laid his goddess down. For I'm no devil, I'm far.
Tune in to International Pagan Radio. You can hear your favorite artists such as Dave the Bard, Tuatha Dea, Spiral Rhythm, S.J. Tucker, Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and many, many more. Join us for exciting shows like Ask a Witch and Storytime with Rook as well. www.internationalpaganradio.com on the net or on TuneIn Radio on your mobile devices. Join us on Facebook and Twitter too. International Pagan Radio, all pagan, all the time.
Welcome back to an emerging forest on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. We hope everyone was able to stretch their legs and get a drink. And now, back to Alan.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I hope everyone had a good break. Are you there, Dave?
I am, Alan, and thank you very much for having me on the show this evening.
Oh, I was like, okay, am I going to have to fill?
No, I did not. I did not, escape into the night.
Oh, okay. That's your fault. You could have gone.
I had my chance. Maybe.
So you were going to make some comments, read some comments. You want to talk about the source or just set that up?
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And what I was talking about was the way that Roger Waters was attacking Donald Trump with the song Pigs 3 Different One. ones, and he also attacked other people as well, which is fine. But, I mean, attacking is not really an effective way to get your message out there, particularly, like you said, when most of the people sitting there are just, you know, drinking their beer and just wanting to enjoy the show, and their $40 T-shirt and, you know, the hot dog or $7 pretzel, whatever. And there's something to be said. You know, there are a lot of people say, oh, millennials don't care, and the younger generation, you know, they don't understand. And you have Roger, of course, represents the baby boomers, which is a much different generation. And Tumblr is basically a wasteland, pretty much, in my opinion. No offense to Tumblr. I mean, there's some interesting things on there. But there's a blog that I follow from time to time. And in October, this young lady, really, I thought, and it's not a political blog whatsoever. It's more of a spiritual blog regarding her own spirituality. It really did one thing that talked about politics, and I thought nailed it in a way that not even the networks did. And I'm going to read this verbatim, and it's not my words at all. It's the words of another person, a woman, and I'll give the source of the words at the end. So she titled it Rare PSA, and in it she was addressing the people that follow her blog, and she said, "I certainly do not wish to discuss politics in this sacred space." She continued, "However, Tumblr America is overflowing with misdirected," there's a expletive here I won't say, but you can use your own imagination, "and a reality check is in order." And then she goes on to say, "If self-righteous hatred is controlling you, come hither and sit down. Politics is a scam. You do not loathe Donald Trump, a complete stranger, mere marionette, mass distraction, with every fiber of your being." Then she continues, "You loathe the system. You loathe your life. Your needs are starkly unmet. Your job, debt, educational institution, internal emptiness is stifling your soul. Your relationships are empty and lifeless. You feel utterly alone and disconnected. You are emotionally starved and intimacy deprived. You fear and suppress your own darkness. You need connection and belonging, interdependence and community." And then she finishes, "Produce real change and pour your energy in building a purposeful, fulfilling, sustainable reality." And the source of that is a Tumblr page, the Mother of Revelation.tumblr.com. It can be found on Tumblr, the Mother of Revelation.tumblr.com. And I felt that it really talked about, I mean, it was somewhat harsh, but sometimes harshness is needed. But the end, I thought, produce real change, pour your energy into building a purposeful, fulfilling, sustainable reality. I mean, that's very true. You get caught up and you get stuck in the trap of as she said, you know, loathing Donald Trump, and really he is a marionette, a mass distraction, and a creation of media, let's face it. I mean, he's been playing the media for decades. But, you know, it's like, look into yourself, make the change within yourself, and don't get caught up in this trap. And what Roger Waters was doing was just the opposite. He was pulling everyone into the trap.
Well, that's a very... There's multiple facets of what you just said that are very interesting. The first of which is...
And these are not my words, of course, as I said. It's from the Mother of Revelation.
I understand.
I just want to make sure people listening don't speak. I want to reemphasize that because I don't want people to get the wrong impression. So.
Right. Those are not the words of David Whitman, my guest tonight. Those are the... The words of someone writing
a young woman
blog.
Who's a millennial. Yes, very young.
Yes,
so.
And my transition as a person has come to the point where I don't see injustice or sin or evil. I see a way of life that I don't identify with, and I want to do something else. So the title of this show is not I'm pointing a finger at someone else. The title of this show is what is emerging from me, or what is emerging from what I'm talking about is not a use of my energy to a perfectly good way of society. No way of society is poor, in my view. They're just a way of expression, and all ways of expression have their uses and have their value. I just think that there are other ways of expression that aren't represented by the present society, and that the present society is actually conquering and reducing the number of ways of expression. So I'd like to express my emerging forest, not only to express myself, but also to create an understanding with other ways that they do have to defend themselves, that they're not naturally going to, they have to get stronger, that they actually have to fight for themselves in order to remain here. But even within that, I'm going to fight for them because I want to see a more diverse. I mean, you look at plants and you say, okay, plants must be fed all of these various things and more things than we know about. So we set an unbelievably nutritious table for the plants. Well, what's our reward? Our reward is the plants that we eat. So if we are quote unquote the king, our job is to make sure that we set an unbelievably nutritious table for all of the other people that are here, because they're going to mature in their mind and in their expression and in their freedom, in our lack of oppressiveness, they're going to bring forth the vibrancy in the community that feeds our mind. They're going to hang out the shingle that basically is the resume of how it's literally my report card to the souls that actually are not in body as to whether the fertility of this mind space is good enough for them to come in and bring their even quote unquote higher level vibrancy here for everyone. So yeah, I mean, she's expressing that there's a trap, and the trap is, to put it succinctly, the trap is being a moral person. The trap is saying there are, as you just said, or as she said, to not engage in an understanding of your quote-unquote darkness. And I don't see my quote-unquote darkness. I just see another part of myself. And in order to defend yourself from, you know, whoever's trying to limit your expression, you have to be able to be strong in your darkness. That's why I don't like to say there's darkness, because it's just another tool. It's just another way of making your, you know, keeping your territory, so to speak.
It's important to have connection, and that's the gist of it. If you're not connected to the side of yourself that you're not comfortable with, then you don't really have that connection, because you have to be able to look at the side of yourself that is not as presentable to the public as other sides. You know, everyone has, you know, kind of a part of themselves that is more, maybe more destructive, or maybe more, like you said, too self-righteous, or just their blind spots. You know, everyone has blind spots, and I think that's part of that as well. And it's easy to point a finger and to demonize someone than it is to actually look at the reality and the whole picture, the overall structure of it, and that there's a wide variety in the whole fact, you know, and to get beyond the idea of the mass society's view of things, like you said, and to make your own reality, really, and find your own path in finding what works for your own self, your own individual self, and then finding interdependence with others and building community, while at the same time remaining, you know, strong to your own truth, without falling into these traps, and to realize that there's sides of yourself that we're not comfortable with, but they're part of us, and to suppress them is bad as letting them run rampant through us. And that could be something like addiction, or it could be personality aspects or what have you. And we also do coaching as well in hypnotherapy. So I talk to people about these types of things, and really I listen. I think that's the key. Anytime that you're in a position of a therapist or maybe a coach or I think you're a listener, and you let people talk through what's going on, and then at that point you're able to help them come to their solutions, because no one's really broken. Everyone just needs time space to be held and allow them to find their solutions. Because if I tell someone what their solution is, that's my solution, that's not their solution.
It's very difficult to, first of all, in a therapy situation, there's the value that you have as a therapist, and you're really hopeful, and it might not be the case that the person who is your quote-unquote client might not be able to receive what you have, and therefore you might fail, because everybody is sort of on their journey, and it's hope mm-hmm. that someone who's coming to you, it's hope that the rails of the journey, the rails of the train that the person is, where they're going, it's hope that what they're going to receive from you will actually, it's going to be recorded by their soul. But what you're hoping for is you're hoping for them to actually use it now. Now, the reason they came to you was to get that resource on board, and they might walk away from you and you might feel let down because they didn't immediately use it. But they came to you and loaded it up, so it's there and it's going to be used. I'm really of the opinion that all parts of ourselves are incredibly valuable, and it's
true.
It's this society's perspective that they wish people to not use
into
everything that they have. They wish to basically say, I know you're really qualified in this other area, and that if we said that was really valuable, you would be very, very powerful. So what we're going to do is we're going to say that type of conduct is immoral and you can't go there. So if you take a whole person and cut them into a whole bunch of different pieces, they're not strong. And
right.
one of the things that I try to tell people on this show is that we've all got the things that we need to do day to day to get by, to make money, to pay our rent. But then we have our passion, and our passion is what we're doing to further our strength of our soul. And that engagement, that activity, might not be something that's acknowledgeable in society. You might have to keep
mm-hmm.
quiet about it. But those are the things that you're here for. So literally, if everybody else was sort of like a zombie, but their soul could have an eyeball and be watching everybody else, that eyeball from the soul is waiting for each person to engage their passion, because that's the value that that eyeball, that soul wants to see. That's the next step. I mean, that eyeball from each person is waiting for, quote unquote, for David to do the next thing in his passion, so that then all those eyeballs can react and say, oh, okay, David did his thing, therefore this is out in the space, so I can go to my next, you know, I can do my next thing, and we can continue. But the issue is that the mass society is so distracted by the actors on TV, you know, the sports entertainment actors, mm-hmm. and the political entertainment actors. And tonight in the East Coast of the United States, it's the Irma weather folks actors, you know, distracting everybody to, you know, beyond whatever you want to say, with this weather event. And the quote unquote way that the machine moves forward is for everyone to engage in their passion and take a little bit of a step off the gas on, quote-unquote, having their eyes and mind captured by the entertainment.
Yeah, and the sad fact is, Alan, that fear sells, and that's what media sells, is fear, 24/7.
Yep. So my program and what I communicate here is to have people begin to realize how valuable their passions are, and to understand once you get to a point where you're actually, like, you are engaging and looking and observing society as you are, you've taken a step away from society, and those are the people who I'm engaged with in this program, who are also developing over the last 9 months a backlog of material where all of my development of these ideas is actually in recorded form. So mm-hmm. if somebody wanted to take a course in where does a moral society that cuts people, whole people into pieces, where does that lead the fertility of the mind? Well, it leads the fertility of the mind into the fertility of the space that we see, quote unquote, outside of the mind, which really isn't outside of the mind, but we look at a polluted, dying planet. Well, it's a polluted, dying mind. So there's a lot of facets of, I mean, no, there's no story in society that is outside of discussion of fertility, which is so interesting, because I always come back, I always start at some weird or really, really offbeat place at the beginning of the hour, and mm-hmm. literally here we are at 54 minutes after the hour, and It's all coming back to, well, the stewards of this society have the ship's rudder pointed in the anti-fertility direction.
Steward of this society should be thrown overboard.
Well, the issue is that their way is equally valuable and equally righteous, and I like to say to people, they're a direction. It doesn't matter about morals. They're a direction, and they certainly have a lot of people who are voting to continue in that direction. So if you feel called to not go in that direction, we've got a lot of work.
Well, I think it comes down to, and I thought about this several years ago, and I always come back to it, and it's really about having a revolution, but the revolution is your own revolution. And if everyone has their own internal revolution, then things change. You don't need to storm the fortress with with weapons and with guns blazing and swords raised. You do that within. You make the internal change, and the external change occurs. And if everyone has their own little individual revolution with themselves, things change.
Yes, that's very true. And I don't have an argument with another way. I just have like a teeter-totter discussion, which is basically they're on the other side of the teeter-totter,
mm-hmm.
and I think the teeter-totter needs to be more balanced. The thing is that the quote-unquote dominant mainstream way has customers, which means it has souls that need that experience. Therefore, those souls' needs need to be met. And I don't mind that. It's just that I think that there are other needs that need to be met. Even beyond that, I think that the way that we are going presently has gone too far, and it's actually what has caused me to try to do something or to begin to try to do something is because I think that the foundation of our space is based on fertility. And we can certainly have a sector of the space that's still doing the same political shenanigans, but if the underpinnings of the space are actually degraded, the fertility of the underpinnings, then we're not going to be able to express even what's being expressed today.
Well, I feel that there's a fear of growth and transformation, and that people expect, or a lot of people, humans, think that they have to remain the same. It has to be the same thing. I can't change. I need to do the same job every day. And there are people that find great fulfillment in that. But I believe that, like you said, the teeter-totter concept, that it's too many things where people are expecting that everyone else to fit in their same paradigm. Not everyone's a 9-to-5 person. Not everyone is excels at more task-oriented lifestyle. We do change. I mean, there's no possible way anyone's the same at 20 than they are at 30, or they're at 40, or even at whenever. If you're not open, I feel if a person isn't open, they become trapped in their own comfort zone of just staying in stasis. And stasis is a form of form of death in a lot of ways. And transformation and change is really what the evolution. I mean, that's why evolution is evolution, because things are constantly moving. I mean, nothing stays the same. We're moving right now. Still, we're moving. You know, so that's to me is the key, is being open to transformation and change, and being able to see through the illusion that's painted. And sure, you can dance with the illusion once in a while, because it can be fun, to go to a concert or whatever, but you realize that's what it is. You put it in context.
And
you don't spend 12 hours in front of
the
TV waiting for a hurricane to hit, and you're 1,000 miles away from the hurricane.
Right, or you're not... you can engage in the mainstream, but when mainstream becomes a distraction from,
mm-hmm.
I mean, most people have their mainstream as their entire life, and they don't have a private life.
No, they live vicariously through the Kardashians or through whoever the hot people are at that time.
Right. I mean, they have heroes, and they don't realize that it's like I still have fascinations with role-playing games. And you play a role-playing game so that you can actually root for somebody, or you have a sports mm-hmm. hero who you root for. And it's really hard to basically say, no, wait a minute. I affect reality. I bring things to me every day that are for my spiritual fulfillment. I'm really that powerful, and I'm going to stop rooting for LeBron, or I'm going to stop rooting for Tom Brady. I'm actually mm-hmm. going to make a pseudo role-playing game where I'm the hero, and I'm saying, okay, I need to get to this much physical exercise, or these are my goals for the year for my character. And you say my character's name, but it's your name. And you start treating yourself as this magical person. And the first qualification you put up at the top is you say, this person brings his or her reality to himself every day in order to build his character, his or her character. And that's true. And you can say, okay, what skill sets do I want to build into my character that I will have a better handle on 5 years from now that will actually be really great for my character, regardless of whether I'm 6 or 60, because the soul is ageless. And you look at yourself as being that. That's how you look at yourself. That's a complete paradigm shift, because then you start to look inward instead of looking outward. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Alan.
Hope you'll come back.
And, I believe I will.
We'll talk offline about possibly having you back. And
okay.
What we can do along those lines. But if people want to get in touch with you, if they're interested in your therapy, which we didn't really get into tonight, but we might on
mm-hmm.
a subsequent show,
sure.
How would people? How do you prefer that people get in touch with you?
Well, you know, I really like Telegraph, but it's kind of difficult these days. So I'm trying this new thing called email. And I have an email address, and it's Whitman, Whitman, 0906 at gmail.com, and I can be reached that way.
Awesome.
And,
okay.
You know, if anyone builds websites, I need some websites built, because I'd like to expand my online presence in some manner. So that's my email address, dwhitman0906@gmail.com.
Well, everyone, as you know, my name is Alan Ritter, and this is An Emerging Forest. And please get out there somehow and engage your passions. And my email address, as always, is RITTER.ALAN88@gmail.com. I'm the sole proprietor of a small produce business in the southeastern Pennsylvania and New Jersey area, and you can join that either by emailing me or by going to produceclub.us, and that will take you to a Facebook page. But if you don't do Facebook, just email me and say you're interested in joining. And thank you so much for being my guest, David. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
My pleasure.
Either live or subsequently. Have a really great week, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.